From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Friday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Farm, Neil McCready, Clark Ford Studio. This morning, we will talk to Ryan Brown, as we're going to do most Fridays during the SEC football season. He's from WJOX, the Roundtable in Birmingham. A little bit of everything college football-wise here over the course of the next hour. Some other things, too, up at rebelgrove.com this morning. Got a story on Dawson Knox. Played about 20 snaps against California last weekend. They had an MRI Sunday on his foot. It's still holding up pretty well after that stress fracture during fall camp. Also up on the site, a basketball official visitor this weekend, Alex Lomax. You can read about that up on the website as well. Also a commitment for basketball yesterday. Kid from ICC, Neil, his name is?
Brian Hallams. Really athletic kid, 6'4", 6'5". He's a wing. Probably the best JUCO wing in the country. What does that equate to? I don't know. He draws some comparisons inside the program to Terrence Davis. Maybe more athletic than Terrence. Maybe more powerful than Terrence, but not as smooth of a basketball player.
And a junior coming in.
Yeah, and so from a time frame standpoint, what does he give you? Well, you know that baseline, he gives you a great athlete, an explosive athlete on the floor. Does he walk in and give you a scorer? Probably not. You never know. Might surprise. But I don't know that next year he'll be asked to walk in and score. He'll be asked to come in and be an athlete. Probably has a chance because of his athleticism with high-level coaching to be a good defender. So a guy that has a lot of upside, but a limited time frame to achieve it. So there's a certain gamble there if you recruit heavy JUCO. Andy never has, and almost certainly never will recruit heavy JUCO. But he's a guy that when you have six or seven scholarships opened at the end of a year, he can fill one and can come in and athletically handle playing in the SEC right off the bat.
Podcast today brought to you by the Oxford Exxon. It is Free Gas Friday. The Rebels aren't at home, but they're still going to give away a free thing of gas to one follower of the Twitter account, Oxford Exxon. So go follow them. It's not a requirement to tweet at them, but I have a hunch it would probably help your chances. So do that. Oxford Exxon on the Twitter, and you can win a free tank of gas. They give away four free tanks of gas when the Rebels are at home, but even with them on a bye or on the road, a free tank of gas to one of the followers. Also, use your plenty card when you go to the Oxford Exxon or any credit card location inside the state of Mississippi. The blue sky is what you'll see at the convenience stores. They're giving away four tickets to the October 21st LSU at Ole Miss game, VIP passes, Ole Miss apparel, and more. And again, all you got to do is use your plenty card. Use it at the pump. Use it inside the store. And every time you use it, you are automatically entered to win. You can sign up for a plenty card at exxon.com/plenty, P-L-E-N-T-I. Also, happy birthday to Cora Craddock this morning. I think she turns 8, if I have it right. So, happy birthday to her.
And again, happy birthday, Cora.
Again, coming to you from the Clark Ford studio.
We are Clark Ford, 662-257-1900 is the number. ClarkFordInc.com is the website. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for, and he'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's really that simple. It's right to the bottom line. No haggling. Just a great deal. You get great service after the sale. You get a great Ford product, of course. So you get your quote. And you can shop it around if you like, or you can just let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many listeners of our podcast. And that's, like I said, take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. And at the end of your deal, tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on any of our family of podcasts. This one, of course, the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. We dropped one of those yesterday. Also, the Soft Verbal presented by Billy's Pecans. That's got dropped yesterday as well. So mention any of those three, $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory.
Let's see. This weekend, really, I guess one official visitor for basketball. Baseball continuing inter-squads at Oxford High School. Practice at Swayze, inter-squads at Oxford High. I guess technically Oxford Middle, but at the Oxford High baseball field. So
yes, it is Oxford Middle School.
Yeah. It's a little confusing, but it's okay. There's only one baseball field, however, so go
that is
that
correct.
You were embroiled last night in a pennant race and acting ridiculous on Twitter.
Part of it was having fun, and part of it was probably having a little too much wine.
Yeah, you are more emotional than any college football fan in the heat
and
of
I don't
that.
Ever make fun of college football fans. I don't. I mean, I'm emotional about it.
I wasn't saying that with a negative connotation. See, right now, you're getting emotional again when I'm simply saying
it's exhibit A when people go, well, you're the Mississippi State fan. You have to be a fan. No, I mean, if you watch me on Twitter with the Cubs or even the Thunder, you know there's no way that you could feel that way about a school or a team that you cover and hide it. It's impossible.
They won, Neil. They won.
They did. They're not good. They won, but they're not good.
And they're
good.
Going to win the division.
Last night was big for winning a division. They needed to win last night.
They got to win one more time this weekend.
They win one of the next three. And
it's really hard to lose.
Yeah. I mean, they got
– yeah.
Give St. Louis credit, man. They've hung. But, I mean, they're five back with 10 to go. That's really, really hard. I mean,
yeah. Simple math tells you that's
– they play the Cubs four times next week. They would have to win all four.
Well, at least you play them, though.
Yeah, no, they'll get a shot. They beat the Reds last night. I give Mike Matheny a lot of credit because they got swept in Chicago last weekend. And Cardinal fans hate Matheny. A lesser manager would have lost to that team this week.
Really entertaining Thursday night football game last night. Rams-Niners of all people. The Rams pretty good on offense. Jared Goff, a big jump in year two. Todd Gurley's very good. The kid from Eastern Washington's a kind of a fun receiver. I haven't talked to Dylan this morning. He was texting me discussing playoffs at one point during the game last night. And the Rams had two special teams turnovers and tried to give it away in the final minutes, but they did hang on and win 41-39 last night to move to 2-1 on the season. So it was fun for Thursday night, as much as that normally gets a bad rap, and deservedly so. Last night not bad compared to the college football game, which was Charlie Strong and his South Florida Bulls against an incredibly hapless Temple team that's just god-awful. Matt Rhule, even at Baylor, has a better team than what is left at Temple.
Yeah, I went to Buffalo Wild Wings for a minute last night. I dropped Carson off. I had to write basketball recruiting.
Okay.
And so I just took my computer and went there, asked them to turn their TV on to Cubs Brewers, one of them. I just said, just any one TV. You pick one, I don't care. And they did. But they had that game on the big screen, and I thought, and there were people like just watching it blank stares, you know, and I'm like, man, you got to really like college football to sit and stare at that.
Well, especially considering the NFL game was on and fairly entertaining.
Yeah, that's what I notice in Oxford a lot and in most college towns is there's almost an aggressive, we're going to show the college games. I'm sure somewhere they had the NFL game on, but by the time I left, when I left at 7:45 to go get Carson, I had not seen it yet.
Last week, it was last Saturday.
By the way, Buffalo Wild Wings, you really should advertise with this. You should bring us in there.
I caught a little bit of a chuckle. I tried the new barbecue plates on the square. We're going to go to Ryan in a second. Was it Moe's? Is that right? It's an Alabama business, but they franchise it out, and there's one here now.
I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah. It's where Ribcage was.
Oh, okay.
Put another barbecue place in there. And they fixed it really, really quickly, I realized. But I was in there right when the Alabama game was starting last Saturday against Colorado State, and then, like, LSU was playing Mississippi State. That was kicking off. Vandy, Kansas State. Like, and at first, they had all the different games on the TVs, and I noticed right when I was leaving, Alabama was starting. And they flipped every TV in the place to the Alabama game. And I thought,
you're not in
Tuscaloosa.
You're not in Alabama, buddy.
You might be an Alabama business, but that's not flying here. Just giving you a heads up. That's not going to be okay. And I think within like 3 minutes, it was like, oh, God. Like, and it was like, let's chill. But
they had programmed them all to flip?
I don't know. But I don't know why or how, but they all went to the Alabama-Colorado State game at the moment for a couple minutes. I thought, I'd love to have seen that in Tuscaloosa. Every game flip to
LSU
or something.
God, they
riot. Auburn, you know, even just
Mama.
Mama, what in the world, Mama? What happened? What happened to the TVs, Mama? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's the end of the world, Mama. Mama, that preacher was right. That preacher was right, Mama. Look.
Boycotts and never eating there again.
I've never come back here again.
They wouldn't have done this at Dreamland.
This is unbelievable, Mama. Unbelievable. That preacher was right, Mama.
All my business going to Archibald's now.
I've been tortured, Mama. That was bad. Bad.
Is ribs something you don't go to now because of the weight thing, or is that still one of your okays?
You know, I don't know that I've ever really gone anywhere and gotten. I mean, I can do ribs myself.
Yeah, yeah. Not a big eat out.
I'm not. Yeah, and I'm not a big. I like ribs, but no. I mean, I don't.
It doesn't spurts. I crave them at certain times, and then I can go 6 months without ever caring for it.
Yeah, for me, it's one of those deals where I've got to have it worked out just right, where it's at the end of a week where maybe I ran 50 miles so that I can mentally allow myself to go there.
All right. We're going to go to Ryan in 1 second. Tell you the podcast in part brought to you by Tyson Drugs. TysonDrugs.com, the makers of Sildenafil, is the cheaper, better alternative to that little blue pill. $10 instead of 50 or 60. You can go to TysonDrugs.com and fill out the request form right there for Sildenafil. 662-252-2321. If you'd like to give them a call, you give them your doctor's name. They get that prescription ready, and they will even deliver it to you if you are not local. You can break it up into quarters, halves, or take the entire tablet if you so choose. So, again, TysonDrugs.com, 662-252-2321.
Podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan. They've got everything you're looking for, new, previously owned, lease deals as well. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Tell Gene and Sandy you heard about Grenada Nissan on the podcast. You get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. The podcast is also brought to you by Michael Oswalt. He's a realtor, specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across the state of Mississippi. Works with Tom Smith Land and Homes. It's by far the largest broker of land in Mississippi. Go to his site, gotland.com. If you're a buyer, Michael has the biggest land inventory in Mississippi. There's a reason for that. People like to list with Michael Oswalt and Tom Smith Land and Homes. If you're thinking about selling, if you're on the fence, if it's in your future, he'll come to your home, tell you what he does, market your property, and get it sold for you. Tom Smith Land and Homes, in the midst of its fourth record-breaking year. The market's hot. If you're on the fence or ready to call, ready to sell, call Michael. He's ready to work for you. He'll put his money where his mouth is. Market your property, whether that's drone videos or whatever it takes. He's going to put his money where his mouth is to get your property sold. Hunting season's around the corner. Bow season begins October 1st. It's a great time to look for or sell recreational property. 662-719-3967. Visit his Facebook page or send him an email, michael@tomsmithland.com.
Ryan Brown, Rebel Locker Room Hotline.
All right, Ryan, welcome into your Friday morning slot. Thank you for agreeing to do this throughout the football season. You'll be with us every Friday morning. It's a bye week here in Oxford. It's not a bye week in the state of Alabama, though. I'll start with this one because it's an interesting game. I don't think there's any chance at all that Vanderbilt beats Alabama, but is there any chance at all that Vanderbilt is good enough defensively to keep it close?
Hey, can I just quickly say that the biggest surprise is that Ole Miss's offense started their bye week early in the second quarter out in Berkeley? I could not believe that. When Ole Miss had 16, basically at the end of the first quarter, I was like, they are going to destroy Cal. But that's not why you call it a thought. Look, here's the thing with Vandy. You know, they've got these good defensive numbers. I would maintain, especially against the run, I would maintain that some of that was built up against weaker competition. They play Middle Tennessee, who's not a terrible team, but they're also not a big run threat. I mean, Rick Stockstill is a big passing offense. And then they played Alabama A&M, which is just not a really good program. So, yeah, they played well against the run against those teams. But Kansas State last week put 201 on them, the majority of that coming from the quarterback slide, where, by the way, Alabama gets most of their rush yardage. And the thing that jumped out at me is not only did Kansas State rush for 201 on Vandy, they did it with only 76 pass yards. So Kansas State was really one-dimensional, yet still put 201 on Vandy on the ground. And I, you know, to me, I think Vandy's defense has improved. They played well under Derek Mason. They've got a good defensive front. But I honestly think some of their run defense numbers are a little bit smoke and mirrors. And I think Alabama will have success running the football against them, and that is a bad sign when you play Alabama.
Yeah, Neil and I have been discussing it all week. I feel like I want to believe in them, but my biggest thing is they just haven't played any athletes yet. I mean, even with Kansas State, there was nobody on the field that you went, hey, that guy's really dynamic on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, because Ertz, the quarterback at Kansas State, I mean, Jalen Hurts is not the best passer in the world. That's been well documented. But he is Dan Marino compared to that guy. I mean, Ertz is not a good passer. And they were so one-dimensional offensively. I mean, 76 pass yards. And I'll say this, on the other side of the ball, the big concern I think for Vandy is they have not run the ball effectively. So, you know, the recipe to beat Alabama is not you can't run and you're going to struggle stopping the run. That is not the recipe to beat Alabama under Nick Saban. So then, you know, you're going to have to depend on some turnovers. And the one thing Alabama, they've done a lot of things well, but one thing they've done really well, they have not turned the ball over since the Iron Bowl last year. That's the last time Alabama committed a turnover. So Alabama has been protecting the ball very, very well. So if you're going to go into this game as, you know, as Vanderbilt, depending on turnovers to keep you in this game, I think that's going to be that's going to be a tough job for them because Alabama has been protecting the ball very, very well.
I took Alabama and I laid the points, and you've made me feel nothing but better about it. Thank you.
Now, that's a big number, though. That's a big number for what is thought to be one of the better Vandy teams in a while, but I'm kind of with you, Neil, and as it pertains to the point spread, you know, Alabama has not covered the last 2 weeks.
Vandy, I know there's some upset people in Alabama. I promise you that.
There's no doubt about that.
There's some people that are not happy.
Yeah, I could see the Fresno State, and that one I could see coming from a mile away. That was a big number. Alabama had just beaten Florida State. They were a little beat up. That was an easy one. Now, Colorado State surprised me a little bit. I thought Alabama would handle them a little easier, and the score is somewhat misleading. I mean, that game was put away when Colorado State scored a lot of their points in the fourth quarter. But this one screams dominant, impressive Alabama victory to me. That this just is the type of situation where Alabama normally flexes their muscles.
Okay, so I talked to Mick Gillespie on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden yesterday, and I asked Mick this because I know the TV ratings bear this out. This isn't a criticism. I'm having a little fun. People watch a lot of college football in Alabama. I know you've watched a lot of college football. You've seen everybody. Is there any team in the SEC so far that you've watched and said, boy, if they bring their A game, they've got a shot against Alabama no matter how well Alabama plays? Is there any team that fits that criteria so far?
I mean, you're inclined to say Mississippi State, but a couple of things there. Number one, and I am really interested to see how State backs up that LSU win at Georgia. That's a tough spot for them. And you know, look, that was an impressive win over LSU, and this what I'm about to say, I don't mean to diminish it because they were the better team. There is no doubt.
Oh, they kicked their ass.
Dan Mullen and their staff outcoached Coach O and his staff in every aspect of that game. That was a coaching mismatch in that game.
I'm gonna find this right.
And they outplayed them. But now, let me add this caveat. LSU was down to four defensive linemen in that game for three spots. They basically had four guys playing three spots. Their front-line defensive line missed one possession in that game. So there was some fatigue on that LSU defense. State's still going to win that game, and they're going to do it impressively. But I think the score might not be totally indicative of how dominant that was. They were the better team, but, I mean, when you're down to four defensive linemen, you're going to get gassed pretty quick. So that was, you know, I would – and the other thing I would say about State challenging Alabama is they just haven't been able to do it. I mean, even with Dak Prescott, you know, Alabama pretty much dominated them in those games that they played against Dak Prescott. And then last year, Alabama completely took Fitzgerald out of the game, and they destroyed State. I think it was like 51-3 at Bryant Denny. So while you're inclined to say Mississippi State, if you look historically at it, that has not held up over the years, even with really good State teams.
So is – in your opinion, Is LSU that bad?
I don't think they are. But and the other thing about LSU challenging Alabama is the problem with LSU challenging Alabama is they always try to beat Alabama at Alabama's game. They try to crowd in on the run and take the run away from Alabama, and then they try to cram it down Alabama's throat. And that's what Miles always did, and it's what Orgeron tried to do last year against Alabama, and they just cannot
do it.
They've never been able. I mean, since 2011, they have not been able to do that. The regular season game in 11, so. I don't think LSU is that bad. You know, Etling honestly didn't play. Normally you would look at that game and say, oh, Etling must have been awful. Really, he wasn't. They didn't run the ball effectively. Guys didn't have a good game. I don't think LSU is that bad, no. But I was reading Ross Dellinger this morning from down in Baton Rouge, and he wrote a great article detailing how thin they are at some positions and why that is the case, that they really kind of screwed up recruiting under Les Miles a little bit. And they are painfully thin at a lot of positions because of attrition. So while they may not be that bad, they may be thin enough that LSU takes on three or four losses this year.
What do you like about – what's your thoughts on Georgia State? You mentioned it briefly. What do you think happens this weekend in Athens?
Well, you know, Fromm is – he played pretty well against Samford, but, you know, that was Samford. He played okay at Notre Dame. So, you know, I think he's an interesting guy to watch because, you know, you're going to have the storyline coming up soon of what do you do with Jacob Eason when he returns. And I think if Georgia is undefeated with Fromm, I don't know how you go back to Eason. But in this game in particular, the one thing I would say is this is the type of quarterback that gave Kirby Smart fits at Alabama. He probably Fitzgerald doesn't throw it as well as the quarterbacks that gave Kirby Smart fits. But the mobile quarterback that can beat you on the edges, the mobile quarterback that you can't just eat up with a blitz, is the guy that drove Kirby Smart crazy at Alabama. So I think to me the interesting storyline here is how does Kirby Smart defend the type of quarterback that used to rip him up at Alabama? And if he can do that, obviously, Georgia is going to win this game. But I would also be interested to see if State could take the run away from Georgia in a lot of ways the way they did against LSU with Sonny Michel and Nick Chubb back there.
See, I think they can. I think this is going to come down. I know this is breaking. This game's going to come down to quarterback play. They're going to make.
Well, then, yep.
They're going to make Jake Fromm beat them.
You got to go State in that situation, right?
Huh?
You got to go State in that situation if it's quarterback play, right?
I went with State. Chase went with Georgia. Neither pick is bad. You can very easily make an argument for Mississippi State in this game. You can very easily make an argument for Georgia in this game. I'm of the opinion State's defense is really, really good. I think Simmons is arguably the most dominant defensive lineman in the league.
I agree. Yep, I agree.
And so if they take away – if you take away – or even if you just limit Georgia's running game and put them in some third and fives, third and fours even, and you make Georgia put the game in Fromm's hands – at Notre Dame, they didn't want to put the game in Fromm's hands. They did everything they could to not put it in Fromm's hands. And I think Mississippi State's going to make Fromm beat them. And I'm not saying that he can't. That jury is still out. I'm a little guarded about it. I'm not sure that he's ready to do that. I will say this. If he does beat Mississippi State, if Fromm does it, and they look like the team to beat in the East, when Eason comes back, that is going to be a really tender situation to handle because I'm not convinced Jacob Eason's the type that's going to hang around for a couple of years and compete with Jake Fromm. If he sees it's not his job, he might bolt.
Yeah, I mean, and he would be a highly regarded free agent. There's no doubt about that.
For sure.
You know, he would have some takers if he decides to bolt, and I'm kind of with you. That's a tricky situation that Kirby Smart's never had to deal with as a head coach because he's young as a head coach. And what he and Jim Caney do with that, I mean, that's a tough spot for them. But I'd say one more thing about State, though, Neil, is Todd Grantham has this history of looking like a defensive genius one week and having the most puzzling defensive performance the next. And that's the thing I think with State is how consistently does that defense play under Todd Grantham? Because that's kind of been his history. Like one week they look like the 85 Bears, and the next week they can't stop anybody. So that to me is another storyline in this game, is Todd Grantham's defense able to bring that same type of performance that they did against LSU last week and do it consistently on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, it's the most intriguing game on the slate. There's no,
I agree.
Alabama-Vanderbilt's just it's not interesting, even though I want it to be because I like Derek Mason and the Vanderbilt story's cute. I guess the other game that's pretty interesting because it's been so long since they've won is Kentucky entertains Florida. Kentucky had a huge win last week, at least in my eyes. I didn't see them going to South Carolina and winning, certainly not winning the way that they won. Florida gets the dramatic win over Tennessee. The Florida-Tennessee game was really entertaining, and it was better played than probably people are giving it credit for. Who do you like in Lexington and why?
Well, I think Kentucky has the quarterback advantage there, if you want to look at that. And, you know, while Felipe Franks threw an amazing pass at the end, and I don't know what Tennessee was doing at the end of that game on defense.
Oh, my God.
But
it still baffles my mind, man.
I mean, I don't know. Butch was lost at the end of that game, like he is at the end of so many critical games. But, you know, you take that one pass away from Felipe Franks, the 65-yard touchdown pass, and, man, his numbers were really pedestrian. I think, you know, he had only a handful of passes that were for more than 10 yards, so they are using him at a dink-and-dunk offense. And, you know, Mark Stoops, I don't think, has a juggernaut up there, but the way I've heard Kentucky described is what they do well, they do exceptionally well. So, you know, they're a team that with Steven Johnson playing quarterback the way he has played, and, you know, I think with Stoops' defensive mind and how Florida could be so pedestrian offensively, I like Kentucky in this spot. I think they break the streak and get the win over Florida. This Florida offense, taking it on the road the way they're playing, they cannot run the football. They don't trust Franks to throw over the middle of the field. They don't trust Franks to throw anything more than intermediate passes. To me, that is just a really, really difficult way to try to win a football game. The one thing Florida has going for it is they've got an opportunistic defense. You know, they've had three pick sixes so far this season, two against Michigan and one against Tennessee last week. So that's one thing that can keep them in the game is the fact that their defense can create turnovers and actually score off of them. But they have to have that. I mean, that's the only way they're surviving right now.
Which coach is going to have an absolute terrible week next week? Jerry World, A&M, and Arkansas, because the loser is in deep trouble.
Yeah, you know, and Bielema has never beaten Sumlin. I get the feeling this is more of an important game for Sumlin. That team just does not look like they've ever recovered from that UCLA debacle. They have come back and played two really, really uninspired games. They played better in the second half Saturday.
Yeah, they did.
But boy, that first half was awful. I mean, they got booed off the field in the first half. You got a player flipping fans off, going to the locker room. I mean, it was a disaster in the first half. So I feel like this is more important for Sumlin, though. If Bielema loses this game, I don't have his record in front of me, but he's now like 10-23 in the SEC if he loses this game. So at some point, you've got to wonder when Arkansas decides, because, I mean, the reality is Bielema is never going to get to 500 in the Southeastern Conference. I mean, he can turn it around. He's 13 games behind 500. He's never, as a Arkansas coach, going to get to 500 in the conference. Now, if he starts reeling off 6-7 conference wins a year, they'll be fine with that, obviously. But I just don't think that's realistic. So you wonder how long Arkansas fans are going to sit through that. I think sometimes I have higher expectations for the Arkansas program than they do. You know, I've seen them in Atlanta. You know, in 2011, I think Bob Petrino maybe had the third best team in the country. His only problem was Alabama and LSU were the first and second best, and they were in his own division. So I think that team can reach heights, but they're nowhere close to Bielema, it doesn't appear. So I think it's a bigger game for Sumlin. I also happen to think Sumlin will win the game.
I do too.
So I think it will probably be a more difficult week for Bielema.
You know, Chase and Ryan both, I'm reading from Stephen Godfrey, who I think is one of the best, so I'm sure he's got this right. But this number, I keep wanting to go, that's not right, that's not right. Quoting from Godfrey, Brett Bielema is 26-27 and 10-22 in the SEC in his fifth season. Yeah. Is that right?
Well, he went 0-8. Remember, first season went 0-8.
Well, I think he's only had Chase may have it, but I think he's only had one winning season in conference. I think he went 5-3 one year. That's his only winning season in conference.
Yeah. So it's right and it's a little skewed. Take a quick second in the middle of the Ryan Brown interview to tell you about Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. 30 years old this year. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, so you're going to local underwriting and understand your market. Also, the leader in condo financing in Oxford. So ask Jason about the float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. You can find him at 662-234-2704 or JLO, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com.
The podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for AC repair, and you can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer is an American Standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, comerheatingandair.com. Or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast, and you get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane, 662-832-8749. The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you want, but they do it with a personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with the live person, all without having to press 10 buttons, without a 5-minute wait. OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account you'll find anywhere. It's called Kasasa, and with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. With Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. OUB also offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. And now back to the show and our interview with Ryan Brown. What would you think of Brett Bielema on the open market?
So Nebraska is obviously going to come open.
Yep.
Would Nebraska fans be excited about him? I don't know. I mean, he does have 3 Rose Bowls under his belt, among a lot of other things under his belt. He does have 3 Rose Bowls under his belt. Now, one of those is a little bit of an asterisk because he did it when Ohio State was on probation. So that was the reason he was the Rose Bowl rep at Wisconsin. So, I mean, in a sense, you look at Nebraska and say, okay, you're a Big Ten school. Here's a guy that's been to 3 Rose Bowls, and he kind of plays a style that you're familiar with when he's doing what he does best, and that's lining up and running the football right at you. It almost seems like Beal is a pretty good fit at Nebraska. But I think on the open market, I mean, if you look at jobs that could potentially be open this year, I think would disappoint the vast majority of those fan bases in the Power 5.
Yeah, I've got it up in front of me. 0-8, 2-6, 5-3, 3-5 in the SEC, 4 years.
So the 5-3, I hate to bring back bad memories, that was the lateral game against Ole Miss, right?
Yeah,
that
is correct. They beat LSU and Ole Miss that year.
7-5 regular season, yeah. Went to the Liberty Bowl, won that, finished 8-5.
Yeah. I've joked, you know, people say, what are the biggest wins? And, you know, so-and-so's, when we were discussing Brett Bielema on our show one day, people said, you know, the story came up, what's his biggest win? That was the question. And I said, God, that game at Oxford's got to rank right up there. I said, crap, that's probably Nick Saban's 6th or 7th biggest win.
Oh.
So it's got to be one of Bielema's biggest because it's on Saban's list, too.
Ole Miss has kept Brett either off the hot seat or hired because he beats Ole Miss 30-0 that year when Ole Miss went to the Peach Bowl, actually. And when Bo Wallace got hurt, then he has the lateral year, and then they beat him in Arkansas again in 16-2. He has lived off beating Ole Miss.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. I'd forgotten that it had gotten that out of whack. But, you know, the Bielema is one of those guys that he hasn't really done anything spectacular. You don't look at him and say, okay, hang his hat on that. And I feel like they don't even do what he's known for that well anymore. I mean, when I think Brett Bielema, I think you are a physical lineup and run it at you football team and dare you to stop me. And I think they were 10th in the conference in rushing last year. I don't have that on top of my head, but it's somewhere like that. They were 10th in the conference in rushing. So it seems like he's even kind of lost his way a little bit in his philosophy.
Yeah, they don't have a dynamic back. Alex Collins long gone. Raleigh Williams retires from football. They're just kind of meh all the way around.
Yeah, he can't help him. You know, he can't be – obviously, you can't blame him for the Raleigh Williams deal. I mean, Raleigh Williams is a good running back, and that was just a freak situation there. So, you know, I do think you have to take that in consideration. But, you know, Devon Whaley is who's left behind, and he's no Raleigh Williams. They just don't seem like they do what Brett Bielema is known for anymore.
So, no way that Missouri covers that line against Auburn, right? What are you thinking?
I would not say there's no way to cover the line. Auburn's offense can look really, really, really bad at times. You know, you look at that game. One thing for Auburn is they're getting Kerryon Johnson back. And that's good news because basically Cameron Petway has carried the ball every single running back carry for two straight games now, which is pretty remarkable. I mean, at Clemson and against Mercer of all teams, he has carried the ball every time. They have not gone to any backups for two games now, and Kerryon Johnson has been out injured. So, and here's, I'll say this for, and this is why you look at this game normally and you would say, all right, Gus Malzahn loves running the football. Missouri can't stop the run to save their life. This sets up well for Auburn, and traditionally it does. But you look last week against Mercer, Petway had to carry the ball 38 times.
It's unreal.
To get 125, 123 yards, whatever it was. I mean, his average was less than 4 yards per carry against Mercer, a team that's been playing football for 3 years. So you look at that and you're like, man, if Cameron Petway had to work that hard for his yardage against Mercer, are they really going to be able to line up and just run it down Missouri's throat? I mean, normally I would say yes, but that does worry me a little bit. And if Auburn can't run the football consistently like that, I mean, look, Stidham played much better against Mercer. He had a good day against them. He did have one really bad throw that was intercepted, but by and large, he was really, really good. So you would like to look at this game and say, yeah, Auburn will be able to move the ball fine, but, I mean, they only scored 24 points against Mercer. A lot of that was, you know, contributed to by five turnovers that they committed, but still, I mean, they struggled to run the football consistently against Mercer. So that does worry me a little bit going into this.
There's just no chance Drew Locke moves the ball, though. If an FBS team is across the field, he's awful.
Drew Locke has done something to Chase. There's something going on in the past, Ryan. I don't know what happened, but there is a history between apparently the Locke family and the Parham family, or Drew and Chase specifically. Because if there's an opportunity for Chase to take his bat and bash Drew Locke, he uses it on this podcast without fail. It's merciless.
That is a weird person to have a gripe with.
It is. I mean, who knew?
They're barely in the SEC. Chase.
All right, so Sean White's gone. Gets caught drinking on campus, which tells me they were looking for an excuse to get rid of him. Byron Cowart is gone from the program. Kind of what's going on around that program right now? It feels funky from the outside.
It is a funky feel. I do not disagree with you. And it's strange how these things start to happen. Like, Byron Cowart had been really – he was a highly regarded recruit. I mean, I think some services had
number one
in the nation.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rivals had him number one.
At least in his position, if not overall. And he just has not contributed. I mean, he's been a non-factor, you know. I mean, certainly has not lived up to the number one billing. And so, you know, you look in a vacuum, you look at his departure and you say, okay, so they misevaluated him, they didn't develop him, whatever the issue was, but hey, you're not really losing a lot because the guy doesn't really do much for them. But when you're struggling and when your coach is a little bit on the hot seat and guys start to leave, it becomes a different narrative. And so the Byron Cowart story is probably a lot bigger than it should be based on his contribution to the team, simply because of where Gus Malzahn is right now with his fan base. The Sean White deal you could almost see coming. I mean, there were reports in the offseason that he was going before the season even started. So I'm not terribly surprised that it has played out this way with him. I do think he may have some issues personally, and Gus Malzahn not even, in a rarity for him, even said something like that. So I think there's some things he needs to work on personally, and that's sad there. But it leaves Auburn in a situation where they got a true freshman at backup, and basically at third team, they've got a wide receiver. That's a third team quarterback. It's almost like an NFL situation where you have to go in with an emergency quarterback. That's kind of where they are right now at wide receiver. Like, they have to go to a third team quarterback. So, I mean, all of a sudden, if Jarrett Stidham goes down, this is a disaster for the Auburn Tigers. And obviously, we hope that doesn't happen. And he's been, he hasn't been dinged up yet, but Auburn has struggled to protect him. He's had to run for his life a lot, and it is becoming more and more critical now to keep him healthy.
I know you got to go in a second. When you look at Auburn's schedule right now, you've pretty much seen the league. I asked this about Alabama. Can anybody beat them? Realistically, for Auburn, tell me where I'm wrong. I don't see them beating Mississippi State. I don't see them beating Georgia. I don't see them beating Alabama. And if you told me they stumbled somewhere else, I wouldn't be shocked. What's survivable for Malzahn? I know that you probably could have this conversation in your sleep. You have it that many times on your radio station. But what is survivable?
Well, I'm not sure the scenario you just painted is, because it included a loss to Georgia and a loss to Alabama. And that would make it four straight years he has lost to both of those teams, both of them. And that's Auburn's two biggest rivals. And by the way, it's the odd year, so both those games are at home. So you've lost for the fourth straight time, and you've done it at home. I'm not sure that would be survivable for him in that scenario you painted. If he loses those two games and he's 10-2, okay, maybe you survive that. But you just painted a scenario. I think you gave me four more losses right there. So he's a five-loss team, and his last two SEC games, his two biggest rivals, he loses. I do think there would be a change at that point, no doubt. And that didn't leave much margin for error. You only had him losing to the teams that appear to be really good in the Southeastern Conference right now. That's not accounting for maybe a loss to Texas A&M or a loss to Ole Miss or, a loss to, Arkansas or something like that.
Yeah, no, I'm giving them those games, and I'll be honest, I'm not convinced that Auburn beats Texas A&M. I don't know why. I'm not sold. If you told me those two teams were playing tomorrow and I had to bet the house on Auburn, I would not be comfortable.
Yeah, I'm going to need to see their offense against a good defense move the ball with consistency before I agree with you. Now, what Chase touched on earlier is right. I think they've got the best defense in the Southeastern Conference. It just doesn't get much offensive support right now. But I think it's the best defense in the SEC. I mean, they held Clemson at home to 14 points. And that Clemson offense is better than 14 points at home. Now, some of that, honestly, was mitigated by the fact that Dabo Swinney knew that game was at hand and played pretty conservative in the second half. But still, I mean, your defense never broke in that game. So, I mean, I think they've got to have – I think they got to get some credit for the way they played a really good Clemson offense. And Mercer – I mean, my gosh, I can't even believe I'm talking about Mercer. But Mercer was never really a threat to Auburn as bad as their offense was playing, because that defense held them to 10 points. So – Auburn's defense is really good, and I agree. I'm not going to hate on Drew Locke, but Missouri is going to have trouble scoring against Auburn, and that's why that number probably is a safe play. I would 100% stay away from that game if I had to play the line on it, but, it's made safer by Auburn's defense. They're a really good defense, but I got to see that offense. And here's what's going to happen, I think. I think Auburn fans are going to get rolled into a little bit of a false sense of security, because I think they'll be able to move it on Missouri. I think they'll be able to move it on Ole Miss. Mississippi State's in between those two. But you'll see enough signs of offensive movement against defenses that are probably not up to par that you'll maybe convince yourself that Auburn has turned it around. That makes that Mississippi State game really, really critical for Gus Malzahn. And State has been a tricky team for him. That's a game that is – last year they didn't struggle in it, but in years past, that has been a really tough game for Auburn.
Last 60 seconds we have with you. What did you think of Ole Miss at Cal? I know you stayed up and watched it.
I did. I was excited for that game, honestly, and I thought it'd be a track meet. I thought Shea Patterson would shred California. There are a couple things that I cannot believe. Ole Miss had 16 points with 13 minutes to go in the second quarter and never scored again. That is baffling to me how that happens. And I know Wonderlic got hurt, I just cannot believe Luke didn't try a field goal there at the end, especially after a five-yard penalty. And I know, you don't know, I saw that kicker kick before anybody says anything. Yeah, I saw him kick the backup. But what are your odds better, you scoring two touchdowns when you haven't scored since the first quarter, basically, or kicking a field goal, getting an onside, and scoring a touchdown? I would say your odds are better on kicking the field goal. So I thought Luke badly mismanaged that game. And I just do not know how you can have 16 points basically in the first quarter and not score again against Cal's defense. Though I will say that Cal plays USC this week, and they'll probably get beat by 1,000 after I say this. I did come away from that game impressed with Justin Wilcox out of Cal. He looks like, I don't know, he looks like a head coach. And he looked a lot better than I thought they would against Ole Miss.
You know, this is going to sound stupid. I watched him in pregame, and I thought Justin Wilcox looked like a head coach.
And I thought that was a really bad misfit, because when I think Cal, I think offense, and Wilcox has been a defensive guy. But watching him, I don't know, that team played like a well-coached team. I got to give Cal credit there. I did not think they would play Ole Miss that well. I thought Ole Miss would win that game and would shred Cal's defense. And while Patterson put up pretty good numbers, Ole Miss did not do what I thought they would to Cal in that game.
So hard to win when you can't run the football. It just, your margin for error gets so thin. And that's been the story for Ole Miss.
It was always the issue with Hugh Freeze. The traditional run situations, you couldn't do it. You couldn't line up when you needed third and three. You didn't have a run threat there. And, I mean, it is carried over to Matt Luke now, too.
Yeah, it just makes it so difficult.
I'll give you a stat on that, Ryan. On both sides of the ball, how bad Ole Miss is breaking contact and actually tackling. Ole Miss's offense ranks 61st out of 65 Power 5 teams in yards after contact offensively. And their defense is 59th out of 65 in yards after contact defensively.
Yeah, that's
can't break a tackle or make a tackle.
Hard to win when those are your numbers.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, it was what always plagued Hugh Freeze, is when it was a situation where you couldn't just cut Chad Kelly loose or Bo Wallace loose to run. And you were on, I mean, I'll go back. What year was it where it was, the game was at Bryant Denny, and it was before Ole Miss won those two. So was that Brian Dinkins? What would that have been? 13?
13, yeah. The Tyler Siski binoculars game.
Yeah, okay. So you remember it from something else. It was like, I don't know if you remember the situation, but there was like a first and goal from the one. And Hugh Freeze couldn't run the ball in. And didn't he go for it like on fourth and goal or something? I mean, it was something. Yeah, he went for it on like a fourth and goal.
And didn't get it.
First and goal from the one and never could get a yard running the football.
Yeah, I don't. It's so funny. I remember that game for the binoculars and not much else. I do remember that was the game that Bo Wallace just could get nothing going.
Yeah, there was like a first and goal situation. Freeze went for it, and they just could not run the football in. And I mean, you watch that, and you're like, well, that's why you, at the time you looked at it and you said, well, that's why you're never going to win the SEC. You can't run the football any better than that. You cannot win the SEC. Now, obviously, Ole Miss got better after those games, but it still played. That one thing played on the field, at least, played Hugh Freeze for his entire time at Ole Miss, is they just never had that traditional run threat. If you were in a situation where you could cut the quarterback loose and run, you were in trouble.
Well, we appreciate your time. Know you're busy. We'll be back this time next week with you. It'll be me for sure. I can't promise that Chase will be here, because there's no telling. He might go to Columbia and harass Drew Locke and get arrested. There's no telling, but we'll be back with you next week on the podcast. Thanks for your time.
I greatly look forward to it. It's always fun, guys. Have a great weekend.
You too. Right.
Later, Ron. Thanks to Ron for joining us on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline. Podcast brought to you by Mastercuts Lawn and Landscape, Tupelo, Oxford, surrounding area. They also got skeeter beaters all in North Mississippi to get rid of those pesky mosquitoes in your yard or at your place of business. They do landscape design, installation, landscape lighting, irrigation, maintenance, and turf. It's more than just cutting grass. However, they do that well. To call for a free quote, 662-607-7773, mastercutslawn.com. And remember, sign an annual contract, mention the podcast, first cut is free.
Podcast also brought to you by Vitamin Hydration Therapy, 3010 Old Taylor Road in Oxford. It's right in front of the Faulkner Flats Apartments. It's still the same IVs and the shots as before, but they've added so much more. The cryo sauna, the infrared sauna, combo packages. You can detox in the infrared, get fluids afterward. It's a great way to wash away a wild weekend. You can get the overserve treatment. You can also use the cryo sauna to help with inflammation that's causing headaches. They have the smoothie bar, all natural foods, no added sugar. Same number, 638-3600. Open Tuesday through Sunday, IVs and shots, Friday through Sunday. Call ahead, make sure someone's there, and send them an email, info@vitamend.com. Podcast also sponsored by State Farm agent Romero Miller, the former Ole Miss star and Rebel Grove contributor, can write insurance throughout the states of Mississippi and Tennessee. Contact Romero at RomeroMiller.com, on Facebook at Romero Miller State Farm, or by email at Romero@RomeroMiller.com. Romero Miller State Farm is on Hacks Cross Road in Olive Branch. The phone number is 662-893-1212. The podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. Currently, Ben Brown and his team are looking to hire part-time and full-time sales team members across Texas and the Southeast to join their team. They offer extensive training, support, the best products and pricing in the industry, an exceptional uncapped commission structure. Send Ben an email, benbrown@journeybizsolutions.com. Again, benbrown@journeybizsolutions.com. Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford for the past 4 decades. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than he does. Go to his sites, harryalexander.com. Send him an email, ha@harryalexander.com. Podcast brought to you by Gambrell & Associates. Gambrell & Associates has three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience, more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their site, msbnkr.com, or you can search for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Gambrell & Associates handles Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. The office in Hernando is 662-342-7700. Oxford is 662-281-8800. And the podcast brought to you by 7 South Tailgating. Ole Miss is off this week. They go to the state of Alabama for the next 2 weeks, and then they come home for a long time. Three straight home games in Oxford, Vanderbilt, LSU, and Arkansas all come to town. You want to get geared up for that. 7 South can hook you up. They offer rental packages where you can bring your own gear, or they'll provide gear. Complete setup, game day concierge, post-game trash removal, equipment breakdown, and more. If you give 7 South a try for one season, you'll never tailgate without them again. 7SouthTailgating.com or 662-321-1682.
Thanks to Ryan again for hanging out with us. A little fun with numbers here. I do not feel good about my pick at all with Vanderbilt and Alabama. However, I'll give a little bit of a – there's no way he's in this class, but, hey, the numbers are the numbers, right? Let me find it.
Usually.
Had it a second ago. I'll find it again in a minute. It's what I get for having it up and then losing it, and the person that tweeted it has tweeted 1,000 times since then. This is from Cole Kublik, who's already screwed you out of a pick once this year.
He has.
South Carolina, so maybe this is nothing to even take stock in as well. However, here's a stat. So – QBs leading the SEC in QBR. That's ESPN's little quarterback metric they do.
Yeah.
QBs leading the SEC in QBR are a combined 4-1 versus Alabama since 2007.
Okay.
With 16 touchdowns and no interceptions.
Okay, I'm interested.
Kyle Shurmur leads the SEC with a 91 QBR.
He does. Who are the others that won? Does he have that?
Yeah, would you like that?
Curious.
Okay. Those people are very Kyle Shurmur like. I mean, of course, because they're all leading the in QBR. There's four of them. One person did it twice. Okay.
Okay.
Chad Kelly.
Okay.
Jonathan Manziel.
Yeah.
Cam Newton.
Yeah.
And Tim Tebow.
Pretty good group.
Yeah. So.
Who's the one that lost? Does he say?
I believe that was Kelly in 16, actually.
Okay.
I think Kelly won in 15, Manziel won in 12, Newton won in 10, Tebow won in 8, and Kelly lost in 16.
Well, Kelly won, but his defense lost.
Yeah, Kelly put up 43. So.
Yeah, Chad was good that day.
That was enough. Yeah. Should have been enough.
Should have been enough.
So there's that.
Again, I'm sure Kyle Shermer is a wonderful young man, and I'm sure his mother's very proud.
You need pocket mobility, and you have to be able to throw the football down the field to beat Alabama.
I just don't know that they can do that. I hope they can. I like Derek Mason. You like Ralph Webb. I like Derek Mason. I like Chris Lee, who covers Vandy for Rivals. Good dude. It'd be a great story. Vanderbilt beating Alabama tomorrow. Tomorrow.
Awesome story.
Oh, my God. On a story 1 to 10, it's 10. 10. Vanderbilt, 10. Vanderbilt 4-0 with the win over Alabama popping into the AP poll at about number 11 would be awesome.
Instead, it's going to be 41-13.
Yeah, I just don't see it. But, hey.
Crazier craps happen.
Yeah, although I'm having a hard time coming up with something right off the top of my head.
We talk about that, though. We talk about being able to throw the ball down the field to beat Alabama. We talk about all the people that go, oh, you got to have a running quarterback. No, you got to move well in the pocket, and you got to throw the football. That's how you beat Alabama.
You beat them with dynamic plays.
Can we transition that to how to beat Georgia now with Kirby? Or is the athletic differences still too much?
You beat them downfield.
Okay.
You beat them with an athletic quarterback. You heard Ryan talk about how Kirby struggles with that. If you sit him in the pocket and he's a sitting duck,
he's going to get killed.
They're good with blitzing, and they have so many athletes. Everyone wants to make this about coaching. Everybody wants to break down X's and O's. The thing about X's and O's, and I enjoy a good – I watched the Merrill Hodge – Ron Jaworski show that used to come on.
The little film room thing.
And I liked it.
I forget what it's called, but yeah.
I liked it. It was fun. I learned a lot. The problem is that not all the X's are the same. Some of the X's are bigger, stronger, faster than other X's. And so it can be misleading. What George is doing is they are doing the Alabama formula. Go out and recruit enough great players to where – Your guys are just better athletes, and you're going to win 9 times out of 10 that way. So that's what's interesting about Georgia. That's the compelling game tomorrow. That's the one that, from an interest standpoint, what can we extrapolate? I think that's the game that's going to allow some extrapolation. The other one that's interesting that really we've not given service to this week because – well, primarily because we cover the SEC West. Kentucky, Florida. If Florida loses that game, the Jim McElwain thing is going to get interesting, Chase.
Yeah, it's how long can you live off two East titles over a bunch of bad teams when you cannot score?
So if let's say Florida loses for kicks and giggles. Florida loses to Kentucky. Then Florida loses to Georgia. And then maybe Florida loses to LSU. And then Florida loses to Florida State.
Florida plays Vanderbilt next week.
Where? Gainesville?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Vandy coming off Bama.
But let's do this, though. Let's say Vandy gets them. Because if I'm Derek Mason this week, I'm not treating this like the Super Bowl.
I've got more manageable things ahead.
I'm treating this like an exhibition. Let's go have some fun. Let's see what happens.
Nothing to lose.
No, of course not. And then I'm treating Florida like the Super Bowl.
Go beat them.
Let's go win that one.
Suddenly you're ring hunting a little bit.
Big time. And no shame in losing Alabama. Vanderbilt loses by 17 tomorrow to Alabama. Is anybody going to go, I tell you what, that Derek Mason, he's in over his head. No one's going to say it. No one's going to say Jack. They're going to say, I tell you what, man, the Vandy kids, they play hard. Next, right off the bat, no one's going to say Jack. But you can go win at Florida.
Yeah,
Florida's
1-1 right now.
Okay.
Because they had the hurricane out.
Yep.
Kentucky.
So for the sake of this argument, I'm going to go 1-2.
Vanderbilt.
It's not going to happen, but if it did, 1-3.
LSU.
See what I mean? he could get heated up fast. And their fan base would look at it and go, you know what, that Tennessee game was pure luck. That kid for Tennessee was an idiot. Otherwise, that doesn't happen, and we get our butts kicked in overtime. Florida fans would start counting the Tennessee game as a loss.
Just for the heck of it, after LSU is A&M, Georgia, Missouri, South Carolina.
Ooh, they could lose three of those four.
Probably not, but okay. And then UAB and Florida State.
They'll beat UAB.
And they're going to lose to Florida State.
Yes, sir. Can he survive 5-6, 6-5? Can Jim McElwain survive that? Given all of the coaches that are out there, the pressure to go get – if you're Scott Strickland, the pressure on Scott Strickland to win at Florida with football, and there is pressure.
To go get Jeff Brohm or whoever the dude is.
Whoever the dude is. Do you kick the Chip Kelly tires at Florida? Money's not an issue.
No.
Who is the guy at Florida? Because it's not Dan Mullen. People do the Dan Mullen thing. Scott Strickland's not hiring Dan Mullen. That's the one that gets thrown out, and I don't buy it at all. Do you?
No, but I do think there's going to be a glamour hire next at Florida.
There always has to be, and I don't think that's Dan Mullen.
Your Chip Kelly, your unquestioned top next-tier guy that's whatever. Go steal somebody's coach, even if he, frankly, is a little over the hill at this point. They're going to do something with a name attached.
I wonder if Texas A&M would go after Dan Mullen at 9-3, 10-2.
Be a good hire.
Well, he's a good hire. I think that's more likely than Florida. And again, just before this Mississippi State Twitter people come after me, I'm not saying he's leaving. I'm not saying that he wants to leave. I'm not saying that Mississippi State won't give him a mint on a new deal and keep him there for the long haul. I'm not saying that won't happen. I'm saying I think your team's good. I think you're going to have a really good year, and I think with Jimmy Sexton as his agent, there's going to be interest.
It's going to be talk.
It's going to be interest.
Yeah.
Because the things that have happened in the past with Dan won't happen now. Jimmy's better than that.
10 years ago today, Mike Gundy's I'm a Man speech. 10 years ago.
Can you play it?
I probably could if you give me a minute. You want to hear it?
Yeah, I like hearing it.
Give me a minute. I'll
Jenny Carlson's like, oh, damn it.
Yeah, hold on.
And he walks in carrying the Oklahoman.
Is he carrying it?
Okay. Oh, yeah. He carries the newspaper in.
This is about the quarterback that was eating the chicken out of a box or something.
Like he'd been benched.
And she anecdoted something about getting on the bus with a box of chicken. I forget
what. Yeah, something. I don't remember the exact column. It was a good column because it got him rattled.
Well, it did that. All right, here we go. I think this is good.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40! I'm not a kid! That's why I don't read the newspaper! Because it's garbage! And the editor that let it come out is garbage!
Players, you need to move more like a dog!
Yeah, we're doing a lot of different rants, sorry. That was the main point of Gundy.
Yeah.
I just pulled it up from ESPN.
Let's see, who had it? Someone had the whole thing this morning.
I can find it. Hold on.
And it was really good.
Everybody's hanging around.
Oh, yeah.
All right, here we go. Ready?
Yeah.
Let's talk about this article right here.
Here we go.
If anybody hasn't read this article, I don't read it. This was brought to me by a mother.
No one reads ever.
No one reads. One of our freshmen told me.
Mother.
Oh.
Let me tell you why I want to talk about this article. 3/4 of this is inaccurate. It's fiction. And this article embarrasses me to be involved with athletics tremendously. And that article had to have been written by a person that doesn't have a child and has never had a child that's had their heart broken and come home upset.
Calm down, Mike.
And had to deal with the child when he is upset. And kick a person when he's down. Here's all that kid did. He goes to class. He's respectful to the media. He's respectful to the public. And he's a good kid. And he's not a professional athlete. And he doesn't deserve to be kicked when he's down. If you have a child someday, you'll understand how it feels. But you obviously don't have a child. I do. If your child goes down the street and somebody makes fun of him because he dropped a pass in a pickup game or says he's fat and he comes home crying to his mom, you'd understand. But you haven't had that. But someday you will. And when your child comes home, you'll understand. If you want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, you go after one that doesn't do the right things. You don't downgrade him because he does everything right and may not play as well on Saturday. And you let us make that decision. That's why I don't read the newspaper. Because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage. Attacking an amateur athlete for doing everything right. And then you want to write articles about guys that don't do things right and downgrade them, the ones that do make plays. Are you kidding me? Where are we at in society today? Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm not a kid. Write something about me or our coaches. Don't write about a kid that does everything right, that's heart's broken, and then say that the coaches said he was scared. That ain't true. And then to say that we made that decision because Donovan Woods, because he threatened to transfer, that's not true. So get your facts straight. And I hope someday you have a child and somebody downgrades them and belittles them and you have to look them in the eye and say, you know what? It's okay. They're supposed to be mature adults, but they're really not. Who's the kid here? Who's the kid here? Are you kidding me? That's all I got to say. Makes me want to puke.
Oh, God.
He wasn't very happy.
No, he was not happy.
So it was a splice moment for him. You heard the stat from Bruce Feldman today.
What's that?
Mike Gundy's coaching record prior to the speech, 13-15. His record since, 89-31.
People around that program will tell you that was the day their recruiting changed.
Defended his kid.
People hate media. Hell, I'm in the media and hate media. People hate media. And he picked the right kind of thing to defend. Yet Mike Gundy will tell you that it wasn't his best moment.
Yeah. How did Jenny respond to that eventually? I'm sure she wrote about it the next day, but I don't recall.
Here's what's interesting is this is I'm reading from Sports Illustrated. This is Andy Staples. He says the piece in the Oklahoman that prompted Gundy's rant was written by columnist Jenny Carlson about then Cowboys quarterback Bobby Reed, who had been supplanted by Zach Robinson the week before that Texas Tech game. It used information obtained off the record from Oklahoma State staffers to question Reed's manhood. It opened with the scene of Reed being fed chicken by his mother following a loss at Troy the previous week. Quote, Oklahoma State lost that game at Troy on the Friday night of week 3 in 2007. On Friday night of week 2 this year, the Cowboys will return to non-SEC Alabama when they face South Alabama in Mobile. College football is weird most of the time. What said was, there's something to be said for not being a malcontent, but you can almost see Reed shrugging his shoulders as he says those words. Does he have the fire in his belly, or does he want to be coddled, babied, perhaps even fed chicken? That scene in the parking lot last week had no bearing on the Cowboys changing quarterbacks, and yet it said so much about Reed, a 21-year-old letting his mother feed him in public. Most college kids, much less college football players, would just as soon be seen running naked across campus.
I don't know.
I mean, your job as a columnist at a newspaper is to write things that get read, that get reaction.
Well, hit that one.
Hit that. That's her job. Did she go too far? Maybe.
I get why he's pissed.
Were people inside their program saying the exact same thing she wrote?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Jenny Carlson
her
didn't
make it up. Her facts were not wrong.
No. No, there were people inside that program that fed stuff to her. Speaking of feeding chicken, she got fed. People inside Gundy's program wanted that out.
Yeah.
They were questioning the kid.
Zach Robinson ended up being pretty good.
Yeah.
Good
and then call. It gets out in print, and boy, it doesn't it hurt. And he did the right thing. He defended his team. I do love I don't read the paper. Okay. If Chase writes something and I don't read it, but I ask 10 people, what did Chase write? I sort of read it. When coaches do, and they all do it, it's almost like it's part of the DNA. I don't read what people write. You know what? When they say that, you know what I think? I read everything people write. I'm not on Twitter. No, but you're on Twitter searching your name. You get on Twitter and search your name. Some coaches are super sensitive about what is said about them. And I get that. I can get pretty sensitive about what gets said about me. I understand. Just because you're a football coach doesn't mean you're less susceptible to that.
It's human.
But I never understand the need for that. I didn't read your column. It's like Houston Nutt with his deal with me. I wanted to say, and what happens when you don't read it, is you lose all context. You're upset about the one thing a week that we write totally tongue-in-cheek. Where we're out front with this is tongue-in-cheek.
We take shots at ourselves every week.
Yes, we make fun of ourselves. The picture that we run is of a fake tree with money in it. It's, from the very beginning, obviously satirical.
Just last week, I took a jab at Neil's intimate life in high school.
It was true, and it hurt. And I read it.
You did. Put a publisher's note on it. I saw it later.
I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
I just said it was cold.
Yeah.
I acknowledged that it was accurate. I didn't sue you for slander. I just acknowledged that it was mean and mean-spirited.
All right.
So I mean, we opened this week's Neil's Picks with me saying, I won a week. I'll never win again. Let's celebrate the week one.
Yeah.
Last thing.
Yep.
This Aaron Hernandez story.
Yep.
The people who are saying, oh, this is the end of football, they're overreacting. No question. Overreacting to the nth degree. The people who are saying this is insignificant are underreacting.
It's the perfect story to emphasize and highlight the lack of context and nuance in our society today.
It's great.
Because here's the deal. It's a problem. It's a problem. It has to be helped to solved in multiple ways. Legally, that's the problem here. Insurance, law,
yes, liability.
Legal, liability.
Liability.
Those things is where this is huge. Every time a player does whatever, because here's the other problem to this. It's like that study that came out in whatever hospital, remember a couple weeks ago, months ago, it's like 102 people, 101 had CTE, players.
Yeah.
Well, that was a bit of a skewed study because the people put forth for that study had signs of it. So it was most likely known anyway. It wasn't just a random sample of people.
Right.
CTE is a major problem, not discounting CTE being a problem whatsoever. However, we also need more samples. We need more diverse samples. We need to know what CTE is in soldiers, in insurance agents, in humans at large,
nurses,
in society. Yeah, anything.
Right.
Anything that has to do with contact or physical work, construction workers.
Right.
Let's look at that versus. Right. We talked about, you know, what does this mean down the road? Is every NFL team going to have to give players brain scans every 18 months? Well, okay, say they do that. Even when they do that, what is it being pushed up against? What does the average person get in loss of brain function over the course of 18 months?
Right.
And it is such a complicated topic that involves such emotional subjects to where this is going to be an absolute circus of lack of nuance and context.
Yeah, because the people that say, well, there's nothing to it. Oh, of course there's something to it. Of course there's something to it. Stop.
You have 47 car wrecks a week. There's something to it.
Yes. And then when the people say, well, this is the end of football.
No.
No, it's not. The truth, like so many things, is in the middle. What is undeniable is that every single NFL franchise is watching this case with a tremendous interest. Every single NFL franchise has its attorneys watching this case, interpreting the rulings that are ultimately made in this case, and saying, what does this mean for us going forward? And the University of Florida is going to be added to this suit, which means if you're running a Power Five or even a major college football program, what is your liability? Because the question is, what did Aaron Hernandez know? Now look, CTE doesn't make you a monster. Aaron Hernandez was a bad person a long way ago. You read the story that I can't remember who wrote it, talking to his brother about how Aaron Hernandez's life spiraled downward when his father died.
Is it Wetzel?
I want to say it was Wetzel, and it was whoever wrote it, it was tremendous.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more here than just he played football and he bashed heads. Okay, there's a lot more here. It's like you said, you have to have nuance here. But from a pure medical standpoint, what did Aaron Hernandez know about the extent of his brain injuries? What did his family, were people around him told, hey, he has a problem and playing football might not be the best thing for him? Or did the Patriots, in this case, say, hey, we know he's got some issues. He's a really good tight end. He caught a pass in the Super Bowl, for God's sake. We're good. We don't care. That's where this thing gets interesting. So going forward, what does an NFL team owe its employee? And I don't know the answer to that. And that's going to be some of what's interpreted here. And then if you're a Power Five school and now you say, okay, well, we've got to do brain MRIs every year. Well, who pays for those? That's expensive. And then what do you do about privacy rules? What do you do about HIPAA? What do you do about to your point, how do you compare a 20-year-old who's a running back at Minnesota State? Do you compare him up against 30 other 20-year-olds at Minnesota State who don't play football? Well, how do you get those results? How do you do this? It's really complicated. And when people say, like I said, when people say there's nothing to it, oh, there's something to it. It's being CTE. Eric Edholm was on the Beer Garden yesterday. He had a story out the other day where he said, you know, we were talking about the story that you and I talked about TV ratings and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he said, look, CTE is the biggest problem the NFL has right now, that football has right now. People are reading these stories. These stories are out there, and more people are saying it's not worth it. And that, from a product standpoint, is a potential problem down the road. It's the problem, but it's a really nuanced thing, and the science is not in depth enough for us to completely know yet. But it is something, obviously, that's coming up. And when people say this is a frivolous lawsuit, you know what's funny? I've not seen any legal person say this is frivolous. A lot of legal people are saying it's probably not a winnable lawsuit, but it's a fascinating lawsuit.
Yeah, they're interested in the outcome and the precedent that's set, if nothing else.
No one has called it frivolous. This was a person who had a lot of earning power, was young, had a child whose life deteriorated rapidly. And it's been found by studying his brain that he had severe CTE.
Yeah.
That part's not deniable. Well, he wasn't. No, he had really bad brain damage that was almost certainly caused by football. So what does that mean? That's where people are going to watch it going forward.
Again, Beer Garden, soft verbal from yesterday. We will be back on Monday, have some more content coming over the weekend as well. Russell was in Birmingham last night checking out two football commits, so that story up later today. RebelGrove.com. Talk to you Monday.